This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, this hour is brought to you by Tackle.com. Danny O'Neill is in for Brock for the rest of today, which is great. It's great having you in, Danny. Thank you. Thank you for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
6 degrees of Danny David Moore continues for a couple more days.
We got a skillet lead singer yesterday.
That was big.
Yeah.
All right. And so people have a chance. If you want to go get Seahawks season tickets, get somebody else on that list, big celebrity name, to call into the show this afternoon or tomorrow. And win those tickets, season tickets for the Seahawks this year. You can go see the whole list and the rules at 710sports.com/win.
It's a really cool prize, and if the last time we did the contest is any indication, there will be a furious closing kick.
Oh, so it sort of all came at, right at the end.
Everybody does it under a deadline.
All right. Well, we'll see how that goes here over the next 2 days. Should make for some fun listening. In the meantime, Marshawn Lynch is talking. It's weird. Marshawn generally doesn't talk except for in a few short clipped phrases. But Marshawn is, for whatever reason, talking to
Matt Barnes.
To Matt Barnes, the ex-NBA player.
Correct. Who is the only person who I've known during the 2007 We Believe Warriors playoff run, which is a Warriors fan. That's one of the teams that's etched in our history. I was watching a game and we were like, did Matt Barnes get a neck tattoo in the day off between games? And he did.
Sure.
He got a neck tattoo during the series.
Watch out.
Yeah.
Well, Marshawn is actually talking, which is incredibly rare. He's talking, of course, about the final play of the Super Bowl a few years ago, second and one from the one. Here's what he said to Matt Barnes.
At the end of the day, like, not mad at him, not mad at who called the situation or the play. But at the end of the day, I'm going to tell you like this. When that play was called and I seen the expression on the other 10 guys' face in there, all their eyes was like, if we was in a huddle like this and everybody got their head down it, when they heard the call, even the receivers, all they just was like, and they looked right at me. And I'm looking like, break, what y'all want me to do? So, I mean, at the end of the day, you feel me, though, just, you know, what happened, happened, and I just, at that point in time, I could realistically say I've done everything in the game. And I mean, to win a Super Bowl and to lose a Super Bowl in the fashion that we did lose it in, like, I mean, it don't get no better for a person. All it do is, at the end of the day, is it tests your character. And in the face of adversity, it shows who the you is. You win some, you lose some.
But you live.
But you live.
You live the day. Yeah.
All right, so that's Marshawn discussing what happened in the huddle and telling his side of the story. Can I just ask a question? According to him, they called the play. 10 other faces in the huddle all fell. You're telling me that Russell Wilson looked disappointed in that moment? I don't believe that. There's not one ounce of my body. The Russell Wilson, who watched his kicker miss in, I forget which game, was that the Arizona game where the kicker missed and in a huge spot to essentially make it, and Russell just had no reaction on the sideline.
Both kickers missed.
Even Pete was just like, oh, deflating. And Russell had no reaction. So I'm like, okay, whatever, we're just going to do it the next way. You're telling me Russell Wilson, when he heard that Marshawn wasn't going to get the ball and that he was going to get a chance to throw the game-winning pass, he looked disappointed? You're telling me that Jermaine Kearse and Ricardo Lockett were disappointed that they were going to be a part of that play? That doesn't make any sense. They were disappointed in the huddle? Why? Why would that even be the case? It doesn't make sense.
I would tend to agree with you. I think that that's an embellished and sort of the storyteller's privilege. You remember things differently.
I bet he does. He remembers that everybody wanted him to get the ball. Go figure.
Well, here's what I'd like to say, is that I actually think Marshawn Lynch, of all the different people involved in this play and in the aftermath of it, he's handled it with a pretty good deal of grace.
Marshawn?
Yes.
Well, only in that he doesn't talk to anybody.
Well, but even when he's talked about it, I was there at the locker room when he walked out, and he could have certainly said much more than he did. And even at the time, he wasn't angry. He wasn't defiant. Like, I've never, he's taken cracks at it.
Don't you think it's because he didn't care?
No.
Whether they won or lost?
No.
I think he wanted to be the hero. I think he felt like he won either way. I honestly think Marshawn feels that he won that situation no matter what. If he gets the ball and he goes in for a touchdown, they win. He's a hero. He's happy. And if they don't give him the ball and it doesn't work, hey, should have given me the ball. I look great. His status gets built up even higher forever in history. The truth of it is, and we've talked about this a million times, handing the ball off to Marshawn on second down was a bad idea. It sets them up. Now, the play call they made was awful, but giving the ball to Marshawn was a bad idea for a bunch of different reasons that we don't have to go through. He comes out smelling like a rose. Because he didn't score on first down. Can you imagine what happens if he doesn't score on second down and now all of a sudden Marshawn is the GOAT forever who couldn't drag his team into the end zone? I'm sorry, man. I just don't see it that way. I think Marshawn comes off smelling like a rose, and he's happy about that.
I was going to say, do you want me to play you Luke Wilson's recounting of the same huddle?
Sure.
Like, remember, he was talking at Barstool, I think, earlier this year about that.
We get in the huddle, and I'm like, all right, we're going to call. And I legitimately thought, I'm like, we're going to call 94 Buck. I don't want to get an X's and O's, but it's basically a zone read. Your traditional college zone read.
Right.
And we ran a million times on the goal line. We motioned. So I'm like, oh, we have 94 Buck out of... No, we don't have 94 Buck out of this. I'm like, what is this play? And then we called a pass, and I was like, oh, I'm going to catch the game when it's Super Bowl. Let's go!
Yeah, so his countenance, I guess, didn't drop either. Luke was all excited that he was going to make a big play. Look, it's always nice when Marshawn talks and he's entertaining and stuff, but I don't believe there's any of this that's truth.
That it's a reliable narrator, that everybody looked at it and that he's the victim and they knew he was the victim from the moment the play call
right.
was there. Yeah, I agree with you.
Come on.
I don't think that was the reaction there. I do think that for all the different times and things that has happened, that Marshawn has never twisted the knife about that play.
True.
He's not gone out of his way to say, but like to say that he's not mad and hold a grudge, he could have been a lot less graceful about it than he has been. He made the ad where he was kind of making fun of it. And I do know Marshawn well enough to know that he was disappointed at the outcome and he was crestfallen and he did feel that. And the anger and the hostility that all of those guys have felt.
As much as I love Marshawn as a runner, he's one of my favorite people ever to watch. I don't believe that. I don't believe he cares.
Yeah, he cares a lot about his teammates and guys that love playing with him. And it bothers him. It doesn't bother him that someone's decision not to give him the ball ended up backfiring on them, but it bothers him that his team didn't win.
Well, I'm sure that's true. I'm sure he's bothered for his teammates that they didn't get what they wanted. I don't think he personally cares whether he wins the Super Bowl or not. I don't. I think he cares that he looks good forever in that. I think he likes playing that anti-hero. He likes being the guy that should have been given the opportunity. That's a great place for him.
There is kind of a part two to this, too. He went on before that clip that we just played. He explained a little bit more of what was going on in his thought process along with his teammates in that huddle.
Till this day, I don't know because, I mean, you know, I just took it as what it was. And, you know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, like, I mean, I ain't no selfish. And my whole upbringing has been to put other people in position to shine and to have success and to be great at what it is they do. What certain individuals was thinking at the time, like, is this not the situation that we need to be in? Like, should I change it? Meaning Russell, like, should I change the situation? Or, like, can I get it handled? And at the end of the day, and I'm looking at it like, I seen Russell do some that hasn't been done before. So at the end of the day, I'm not too concerned about, like, if some can get done, because if it's anybody that can make some magic happen, because I seen him do it on many occasions before. But then, I mean, you know, just the honest to God truth, I you know, sometimes I think, like, do you think you should have audibled?
That's cool that he said that. Not that, hey, should you have audibled. It's cool that he gives Russell the credit there. And Marshawn is an interesting. I like Marshawn, and you talked about you like the way he plays. I think the way we understand him, I do think that there is, people have seen a nefarious side to him. There is a part of him that is a dysfunctional employee. I don't think he's necessarily a good employee from a supervisor's perspective. I think he's a really good teammate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's always been a really good teammate. And of all the different guys, and look, we're going to hear more about the difficulties with Russell and all of the, like, there are personalities in there that didn't get along. That's not Marshawn. Marshawn is a good teammate. Now, you can question whether or not he's a good team member.
Right. But no, you're right. I think that's an important distinction.
How he feels about the and the pain that he felt about it. And I think that he feels they should have trusted him. And he, in his heart of hearts, which is what you would want him to believe, if they give me the ball, even though it's a goal line formation, even though we've got
right,
three
I'll
wide
find a way to get it done.
That he's going to do it. And the underhanded that he is satisfied or somehow not bothered by his team's failure to win, that one's there's a level of he cares more than that. He really cares. He does not like authority, and he doesn't like people telling him what to do, and he didn't like Pete Carroll by the end, and he definitely was disruptive and did things. But all of those things, that anti-authority stuff, has never carried over to the way he feels about his teammates.
I agree with that. I'm not trying to argue it has anything to do with the teammates. I don't know that he cares whether he wins or loses that game. His teammates, he might care for them and for their well-being, but I just don't. I don't think he cares that way. I think he cares about the image. I that's been my impression of Marshawn that's developed near the end of his career. I don't think that I thought that early, but ultimately, in the way he handled the last couple of years here, that's kind of what I ended up believing about him. Regardless, the thing I always point back to Bevel on this, because it's not the fact that they threw; it's the play they called. And when he's sitting there talking about all the incredible things he's seen Russell Wilson do, he's right. There's a million different ways that play can be called that allows Russell's creativity and everything that makes his uniqueness to shine through. One of them is not throwing a slant that involves Ricardo Lockett catching the ball and Jermaine Kearse blocking Brandon Browner.
Completely agree.
Like, it's just dumb.
This is what occurs to me as you hear that, is that Marshawn, as even after he's left and after he's gone and all the laundry's been aired out, he leaves a little room for grace for the people he used to work with and used to work for.
It's true.
He says, I don't blame the guy who called it. He talks about Russell. And I contrast that with the exits that we've watched from Sherman specifically, a little bit with Michael Bennett, and now that we're watching with Earl.
Mm.
And of all of the guys, I always thought when it ended with Marshawn, it was going to end terribly. And that was reaffirmed by the decision with the playoff game. And it actually ended pretty well, given all the baggage that the two sides
have
had.
You should talk to Brock about it, because Brock really would disagree with you if he were here. He thinks Marshawn is responsible for every ill that has fallen upon the Seahawks since then. He does. I mean, when you hear Brock, when he's on this show, and he'll be in tomorrow, and I'm sure he'll weigh in on this, his belief is almost always every mistake that was made, every problem that happened with Richard, it was all started by Marshawn acting the way he did and by the Seahawks allowing it to happen.
And I don't necessarily agree with that. I think Marshawn has been pretty consistent throughout his career. I do think that there is an expiration date with him. I do think that he helped embolden Cam for his holdout when that happened. I do think he was part of that. But I think for the most part, while he's been a difficult employee from a supervisor perspective, he's actually cared a lot and hasn't been as disruptive.
I agree. He cares for his teammates. But I think because he's such a disruptive team member, it ends up doing more harm than good. If Kristen Michael had a different type of a role model, I'm sure he cares very deeply for Kristen Michael because he's his teammate. That's the way Marshawn is. Did he serve him well?
No. He wasn't a good mentor.
He was bad for Kristen Michael.
Michael might have been a knucklehead.
Now, he might have been, but it wasn't aided by the fact that Marshawn Lynch was there. And that's just one example. And I'm really making Brock's argument. So get mad at Brock if you want. I know that's impossible for people to do. But Brock will blame Marshawn for just about everything and the way that things went down. And so I maybe I'm tainted a little bit by some of Brock's feelings about him, but I like the stuff he said about Russell. I like the stuff he said about the play. I don't know that I believe necessarily his narrative of what things were actually like in that huddle. But at the end of the day, I just throw it all on Daryl Bevel. So
I would have 4 years ago, if we go back in time before that Super Bowl play, I would have said that I thought when things ended with Marshawn, it would end horribly ugly.
Yeah.
I would have thought that Earl Thomas, when things ended with him, it would end with him in the Ring of Honor as one of the all-time great Seahawks, and that I didn't see it. And you look at
and
it.
Sherm?
And Sherm, Sherm I
could
wouldn't
have
seen.
Either way.
No, I would have thought, because I had not seen at that point, I hadn't seen Sherm turn on the people around him. Now when I look back, I think that's inevitable, and that Sherman, in the same way that Marshawn, it's not an anti-authority thing with Sherm. With Sherm, it's a pretty compulsive need to have the last word, and that he always has to be right. he's so insistent on being right that he can't handle not being right. And when he's in the wrong, he lashes out at everyone. And eventually that's not sustainable. But I wouldn't have known that 4 years ago. I don't think I knew that until about a year ago. But with Earl, and maybe that's why watching that situation unfold, where I thought Marshawn was going to be the guy that left no room for grace and pushed everybody to the point of disliking him. Instead, it's kind of Earl Thomas that's doing that. And now that he's telling the Oakland owner, Mark Davis, hey, come and get me, and reports out of Dallas that he's not going to show up, it's Earl that's taking the blowtorch to the bridge in many respects, where I think Marshawn, for the most part, remains fairly beloved by Seahawks fans.
Yeah, I would say that's true. I mean, how could he not be? The guy's the most fun player you've ever watched. I mean, like, he embodied so much of what this team was. I loved him, man.
Earl's
a
pretty fun player to watch, too.
To me, it's not even close. If you give me the opportunity to watch in their prime, just watch in their prime, it's the running back. It's Marshawn Lynch. It's running people over. It's not close. Cam's second. Richard's probably, I mean, Russell's second. Cam's third. I mean, like, Earl's fourth or fifth on my list of entertaining Seahawks to watch during this
See,
time.
When I come up with,
really?
With some of my favorite plays, it's not more than Marshawn, because Marshawn's done. Marshawn had the single best touchdown celebration I've ever seen.
I'm not saying just plays. It's like fun to watch on a week-in, week-out basis.
Yeah, Earl's up there. Earl's certainly top three.
Really?
Earl is absolutely top three.
I might open this up to people. That's kind of interesting.
You watch the ground that he covers. There was a play that he posted.
That's incredible. It doesn't make it more fun.
The play that he had, he ended up getting called for a penalty on it in 2012. I can still see it in my eye. They are in Miami. He's on a blitz with Ryan Tannehill.
And I remember. He hits Tannehill, and I remember the play.
He's airborne.
Yes.
Like, the ground he covers
it's
on
crazy.
That. And you would routinely see that. And there were times he whiffs. The fact that he makes a tackle of a running back 6 yards upfield before any other free safety, the aggressiveness that he shows, I love watching Earl play, man.
All right, but hold on. If you go back through this era, and I can't tell you what you find more entertaining to watch, but you've got some of the most entertaining to watch on this team during the Seahawks era have been Russell Wilson, Marshawn Lynch, Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor, Richard Sherman. Am I missing somebody in terms of just sheer fun factor?
Kearse has had some big catches.
You can't tell me Jermaine Kearse has been your most fun to watch.
No, but if you're going to make
guys
a list
who
top 10,
who would be
Jermaine Kearse was more fun to watch than Jimmy Graham.
Well, that's true.
Like, Jermaine Kearse has had four or five
of
the better
overall,
catches.
And I like Jermaine Kearse, but come on, he's not that fun to watch. He's like a wide receiver who's come up with a couple big plays.
Okay.
Doug Baldwin is a great player, and I have all the respect in the world for Doug. But, like, in the list of wide receivers, there's, like, a million other people who are more fun to watch than
Doug. I don't know, man. Doug, watching Doug get open?
Really?
Yeah, Doug's on the list.
You are drifting into, like, way too technical land for me. I'm surprised.
One-handed catch in Minnesota when it's 6 degrees
outside?
Wide
receivers are compared on a scale to Odell Beckham and Randy Moss and T.O. and, like, the great, like...
Doug Baldwin's a fun player to watch.
He is not fun like those guys are fun.
Doug Baldwin's a fun player to watch.
You're telling me you can watch one player, one wide receiver. You get Doug Baldwin, Randy Moss, and Odell Beckham.
Well, that's a pretty good list.
Yeah, I know. We're talking, and Marshawn, to me, is one of the three best running backs I've ever watched to watch. Russell Wilson is one of the three best quarterbacks fun factor to watch I've ever seen. Cam Chancellor is one of the three best safeties to watch I've ever seen. Doug Baldwin is not one of the three best wide receivers I've ever watched.
Well, he's absolutely entertaining. If you're talking about the top 10 players on this Seahawks team to watch.
I'm not entertaining or in the top 10, but compared to those other guys?
No, you're the one that made the comparison to the other guys.
I know.
You're
the one that said. I'm ranking them.
So now we're ranking
the
top receivers?
No, I'm ranking the top Seahawks to watch play.
Yeah, if they're in the top 10, Doug Baldwin's in the list of this group.
For the top 10, yes. How about the top three?
Yeah, no, the top three is Russell, Marshawn, and for me, Earl Thomas.
The rules of the game keep changing.
I know. It's gone back.
No,
and forth
that was always
times.
The rule of the game. What the hell is wrong with you people? That was always the rule of the game.
Well, how did Odell Beckham Jr. get involved?
Because I'm trying to make a comparison of where they get to in terms of the entertainment
top
level
three
of
players
their
to watch on this Seahawks team for me has been Earl Thomas. I love watching Earl play.
And he's more fun to watch than Marshawn or Russell?
No, he's in the top three.
Okay. Well, you started by saying he's more fun. That's
he's one of the most unbelievable players. Okay. Yes, he's absolutely one of the guys that I loved
That's
watching.
Really funny. I've never considered Earl that way. I would put Cam there ahead of him. I guess he'd be four. I'd put Richard ahead of him because of the picks. I would probably put Earl fifth on my list of entertaining players to watch, and not in terms of importance, because he's been probably more important to the team than some of those guys. But in terms of entertaining level, like, he's a fast safety. He runs back and forth.
Yeah, the ground he covers and what you'll see him do and when he pulls the trigger and goes. And that's been from the beginning, even when he was making mistakes and almost getting benched. He's a blast to watch for me. I love watching Earl. And I thought that the way he played and the fact that he sounds so different when he talks, he's a unique interview. Like, you're not quite sure what planet he's...
Well, that's definitely true.
And that was part of
most
it.
Most entertaining to listen to, he'd be on the list.
Kind of like this vaguely mystical, slightly spiritual, and all of these things. And I thought that the connection... I just never thought it would become like this bottom line dollars and cents battle with the team like it's become. And if you would have told me that happened with Marshawn, I would have said, yeah, I can see that. I could see it being something where, and when he's on his way out of town, there's nothing is spared. And instead, it's Earl that's that guy, where Marshawn, while when he talks about it, and you can debate like whether he was a good employee and how much of some of the problems that they've dealt with have spawned from the way that he was treated and the freedoms that he was allowed, Earl has never been that guy, yet he's the one who seems to be burning his equity on the way out of town.
Yeah, it is surprising. It is. I mean, it never was supposed to go this way for him.
It's so weird. Yeah. Of all the different players that it's happened with, I think I'm most surprised about him.
Yeah. Yeah, I would tend to agree with all that.
It's a bummer because, man, he's fun to watch. He is a fun player to watch. He's like a little bumblebee.
I guess that's where you and I disagree. I don't think he's that much fun to watch. Like, he's fine. He's a good safety. I'll miss watching Cam tons more than watching Earl.
Cam had some huge hits, and I won't deny that.
That's why I watch football.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
I don't care about a safety being fast. That's cool.
But Bobby Wagner, do you like watching Bobby more than you liked Earl?
Yeah, I might. I like watching Bobby Wagner come up and pop people. I love watching Bobby Wagner on Todd Gurley a couple years ago. Or Wagner, where we were playing the hit of Wagner on, who was the other big one he had? God, there's so many. Bobby Wagner, yeah, I think I enjoy watching Bobby Wagner more than Earl Thomas.
Dave Wyman, and this...
I'm not close on this. I don't know that Earl's like in my top five now.
This came from Wyman. Wyman has sent me one actual screen grab he's ever taken in his life. Wyman figured out on his smartphone how to send me a screen grab, and it was a play from the Philadelphia game, and Earl runs across the sideline, the play's over, and then he dumps a guard. Like, he hits a guy that weighs 100 pounds more than him. And Wyman's only thing... Hey, Danny, if I get on Twitter, can I post stuff like this? Like, that's, like, you watch him do, like, that sort of, like, he ran all that way, and he wasn't going to not hit someone, and he dumped a guard.
Yeah.
Just dumped him on his butt.
Russell Wilson, Marshawn Lynch, Cam Chancellor, Bobby Wagner, Richard Sherman, maybe even Lockett and Golden Tate at times. I mean, I didn't really like Golden Tate,
that's
but in terms of the
talk.
Fun factor, Doug Baldwin would be somewhere after that. Like, Doug Baldwin's a possession receiver who makes good plays.
The more you talk about this, the more I am thinking about putting Earl up above Russell Wilson.
Come on.
And saying it goes Marshawn.
Come on.
It goes Marshawn and then Earl Thomas.
Really?
Then Russell
Did you not
Wilson.
Watch Russell Wilson make two pirouettes and make that play in Arizona last year?
Apparently you didn't watch when Earl Thomas was able to close the kind of ground he was when
did.
He shot the gap, intercepted a pass from Deshaun Watson, and baited him into a touchdown that he then returned.
I think that's more impressive than entertaining, I guess.
How about the game in Toronto where they're wearing the Wolf Gray uniforms and Earl goes from one sideline to the other and a huge loop, covers at least 120 yards
great play.
To return it 50 yards for
the punch out.
The punch out. Those are great. Yes.
They're great plays.
Twice. He's done it twice.
No one's arguing they're not great plays.
I've seen one guy who's able, he's done it twice against the same team where it's the guy's like, just because it's the most unfair thing in football when
they're
running back.
Rule.
When they're running back, like all you have to do is just boop. Touch the plane of the goal line, and it's a touchdown. If you catch the ball, you've got to have four different feet come down in bounds, which is a problem because you only have 2 feet. But if you just boop.
But instead, he ends up benefiting from the only rule that's actually stupider than that, which is if the ball then goes out of bounds into the end zone, the other team gets it.
All I'm going to say to you is that you're on the same side with Jim.
I know.
Moore on
Jim's
that
right
one.
On that one, 100%.
You and Jim.
Dumbest
Moore,
rule in sports.
Two peas in a pod.
Everywhere else
Moore
you fumble
and
out of bounds.
In lockstep.
Everywhere else you fumble out of bounds,
Earl's
you
hit
get
on
the ball.
Gronk. Earl broke Rob Gronkowski. He broke him.
Come on.
He broke him.
You're going to put that ahead of Russell?
Maybe. I'm definitely putting it ahead of Cam.
Really?
Cam never broke Robin Gronkowski.
He broke good everybody point. Else.
Yeah, he never broke him. He broke Rob Gronkowski.
Come on.
He made it so he couldn't play football anymore.
Cam essentially won the Super Bowl by ruining the life, career, and health of Demaryius Thomas, and that was pretty
much
the end of
him. It was Vernon Davis. It was Vernon Davis.
Him too.
Turned into an artiste.
I was just talking about the Super Bowl
He's
itself.
Opening up. from the 206. Seriously, one of the most meaningless debates I have ever heard.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe we should do Superman versus Batman next.
Maybe we will. We're already late. We got to get to our second most intriguing Seahawk. We've been talking about him today. We'll talk about him again next on Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
All right, half hour left in this one. Before we're down to training camp tomorrow, looking forward to be there talking some Seahawks. Quite the debate over the most entertaining Seahawks on this team. I didn't think that would get as heated as it did.
From the 253.
Yes.
Don't get mad at Danny. His hobby is probably watching the weather.
That's true.
From the 206, Danny going Sherman.
Yeah.
Wrong, but can't admit it.
Oh, wow.
It's possible.
The other side of it is saying, Salk, you don't like when Doug jukes a cornerback out of his jock? Like, yeah, I do, but you don't like when Cam Chancellor pounds some unsuspecting wide receiver into dust? Like, you know, these are debates. There's no right or wrong answer to something like this. We just kind of go through it. Anyway, that's the fun
of it. Wait, what?
What?
You agree there's no right or wrong answer?
Of course not. How could
okay.
there be?
Okay, that's good. I just got that on quote. I
that
like
was
that.
That was really good to pick that out, Lydia.
How could it
Thank
possibly
you.
Be? It's yeah. your opinion on what you think.
Yeah, okay. Let's continue. Yes, next.
What am I missing?
That stands in contrast to some of the things you will usually say.
You mean actually arguing for something you believe in?
Yes.
How is that different from saying there's no right answer?
Well, it would be that there are times where you would say, how can you possibly think that?
I don't understand how anyone thinks that. It doesn't make them
there
wrong.
There we go. There we go.
But it's I don't understand their line of thinking. I don't think they're wrong. You get to believe whatever silly thing you want.
It's just
but it doesn't make you wrong.
It's stylistically. Now you're arguing about us telling you that you recognize multiple. You took a more relativist perspective.
Right. What's the fun of debating? If you don't like debating, get out of here. That's the fun of this whole thing. We're down to number two in our countdown.
Number two.
Earl Thomas. Safety, maybe for the Seattle Seahawks. He is the number two most intriguing Seahawk as we get ready for training camp tomorrow. We'll be down there. Big report coming out today that Earl Thomas will not be reporting to camp. All right, it wasn't that big. Chris Mortensen reported as if it was breaking news.
There was one earlier.
Sources have told him Earl's not showing up. What source was that? Reading the news for the last 6 months?
There was one earlier this week where Mike Garofalo. And look, I have a great deal of sympathy for reporters who are in these positions because you're asked to do it. But for the NFL work, he's like, there's no indication that Earl will be showing up for camp. It's like, that's insane. Like, what do you mean? Is there an indication that Russell will be there? Well, yeah, he hasn't given any indication that he won't be there.
Right.
Oh, but with Earl has to signal that he's going to be. Like, everybody's known this is coming. Like, he said it at the Pro Bowl that he wasn't going to show up.
Yeah, it's just been further confirming news day after day after day. Pete Carroll, when he didn't show up at minicamp, was not all that surprised.
We kind of had heard, you know, that he was, you know, he was making that choice. You know, I'm really going to, I wish he was here, and that would be nice. But we're focusing on the guys that are here, and we'll see how that goes.
Well, that's assuming what he's going to end up saying tomorrow is that he's going to be focused on the guys that are there and he misses Earl and he loves and respects him. We'll hear a lot about that.
I'm super close with Earl, first of all. And, you know, first of all, he's a great friend. I think second of all, he's a Hall of Fame player. And third of all, it's a business. And he believes this is the best thing for him and everything else. And, you know, you respect what he has to go through.
That was Russell Wilson talking around it, and Bobby Wagner even sent a message to try to get Earl in.
Before we get off, I would like to take this time to shout out to Earl Thomas. You know, I think he's an amazing player. I think he's an amazing person. You know, he's a Hall of Famer. And just let him know that, you know, we over here, you know, wishing for the best in that situation. And we're thinking about him, and I just want him to know that.
Yeah, that plea went unanswered, unfortunately, as Earl is not going to show up. Why is he the second most intriguing guy on this team? Because he's a really good player. He's one of the best safeties in the game, maybe the best. Certainly he's in the conversation, has been for the entirety of his career. He is what?
Sounds really fun to watch. He's one of the most fun Seahawks to watch.
He's a super fun player to watch as well. He's been part of the backbone and spine of what has made this team this team. Can they survive without him? Probably not as well as they would survive with him. Can they afford to pay another player a big-time premier third contract near the top of the pay scale for their position when they've been burned by the last two, Cliff Avril and Michael Bennett, and really three, I guess, with Cam Chancellor? None of those three, Richard Sherman, none of those guys are here. Can they afford to pay another guy and continue to put themselves into salary cap jail because of an overcommitment to aging players? All of those things have made Earl intriguing, but what has pushed it over the top is the fact that he's been willing to go nuclear, that he's been willing to say to other teams, please get me, that he's been willing to now put his house up for sale here in Seattle and say, I don't want to be there. I'm out. I'm not interested in this. His desire to play somewhere else has changed some of the conversation, and I believe made Earl even that much more intriguing, along with the fact that there doesn't seem to be much of a market for him, as you pointed out a few times, too.
Will the Seahawks miss or make the playoffs dependent on Earl's absence? Nobody thinks they're going to be better without him. Is he the difference between them making the playoffs or not?
He might be. That's part of what makes him so intriguing. He actually might be. He's that good a player. And we know so little about Delano Hill and Tedrick Thompson and even McDougal, we sort of know is a solid player, that it's hard to tell just how important he would be this year.
I don't think they should pay him. I don't think they should give him what he wants. I think it stinks that he's not going to be here to start training camp, and it's really up to him of how far he wants to take it. Does he want to cost himself $3-4 million in missing game checks until he ends up coming back and then plays out the string and then leaves? It's a bummer all around. It's supremely intriguing. And then can Pete actually? They didn't navigate Cam Chancellor. The team did not survive Cam Chancellor's absence. They were 0-2, and they were a mess when he came back, and I think that that cast a shadow over that season.
Mm-hmm.
Will they be better equipped to survive Earl's absence? It's intriguing.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing you always say is when Earl, or I always say, I think you've said it as well, when Earl was out the first time, they replaced him with one of the worst football players we've ever seen. Stephen Terrell was not up for that challenge. He's a bad player. Not in the league, or if he is, he's a special team or somewhere. He's not playing safety. And he's one of the only players I've ever heard Pete call out after a game. Like, Pete doesn't do that. And yet, after Terrell gave up those long passes down the middle, he's like, yeah, can't do that. So, Earl's importance to the team looked even more magnified the first time he was out. But when he was out last year, Cam was playing, but McDougal filled in for Earl. It didn't seem to hurt them nearly as much. I'm not saying that they got better for it. They probably weren't as good as they would have been with Earl. But was the drop-off as precipitous as it had been when it was to Stephen Terrell? No. Like, they survived without Earl Thomas and kind of did okay. So I don't know. I'm with you. I don't think they should pay him. I thought they should have dealt him at the draft. I think they tried to deal him at the draft and unfortunately just didn't get the value they thought they could get. And now you're sort of stuck in this spot where he becomes a distraction to the team. And you got to send a message to Frank Clark, and you've got to send a message to Dwayne Brown, and you got to send a message to Lockett and everybody else who is sort of getting ready to get paid here. And I think all those guys are just going to be ahead of them on the list because it's not their third contract. So that's where you're at. Earl Thomas, number two on the list, not going to be there tomorrow as we count down our most intriguing Seahawks. Every single morning at 9:30, tomorrow will be number one on our list, Danny.
Numero uno.
Numero uno, the most intriguing Seahawks player.
The most intriguing player on the Seahawks.
Yes. It's not necessarily for what he says, but he still manages to be intriguing.
The weight of his words would break another man's jaw.
That's exactly right. Well, actually, we have the guy who broke another man's jaw. He was earlier on the list, Frank Clark. He was earlier on this list. Did you see that live?
Yes.
Was it one of the craziest punches you've ever seen?
I think because of how hard it hit. Yes, because of the size of the guy and how it dropped him.
Could you pay him?
Could I pay Frank Clark? Yes, I don't think the Seahawks should.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. If that's my decision, no. And it's not because he punched Jermaine Ifedi.
Yeah.
Like, the reason is because the Seahawks, when they were good, they paid guys after they became Pro Bowlers. Like, you're paying Frank Clark on the come.
Right.
Like, you're paying him on the belief of what he will become, and I think that's the wrong way to do business.
All right, there's Danny O'Neill. He's been in all morning, which has been great. It is Brock and Salk. Early Mariner game today, 12 o'clock pregame show, 1 o'clock first pitch here on 710 ESPN Seattle. Before that, though, we're going to need to answer your questions, any question on any subject. You know it works. Text us, 710-710, powered by Coors Light, and we shall answer them together next on Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Sox. Answer the question, jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, jerk!
Danny, you ate cottage cheese in here. It's gross.
The blueberries. Cottage cheese is one of the healthiest things you can eat,
so
man.
So gross, man. I'll tell you what, when I was in...
You don't like cottage cheese
no,
either?
I really hate it. It's one of the like, least favorite things in the
really?
World. Really? Yeah. When I was in fourth grade, we went
this
to Vermont.
Called good culture.
Ugh. We
it's
went to Vermont
for
a whole school for a week. Everyone in my school went to Vermont. And they brought us to a dairy farm factory. It was in the town where Calvin Coolidge was born. And they brought us to some wretched dairy, and they were making cottage cheese. And to this day, the smell is still in my nose. I remember two things from that day. One, the smell of the cottage cheese and how disgusting it was. And two, the idea that Calvin Coolidge died. You know how he died? Or at least this is what they told us that day. From complications born out of an ingrown toenail. Which terrified me, like, for the rest of my life. Like, I'd always be cutting my toenails. Like, I don't want one of those silent cow ones.
That's really funny.
I've been worried about
200 Holsteins out back making all this for us, y'all.
I've been worried about that since that's about an ingrown toenail since I was in fourth grade.
I've never had one.
I've had two, both of my big toes.
You're lucky you're still alive.
Really painful?
I'm still alive. It's just like a general throbbing pain that just continues to get worse as it grows. And then eventually it just gets gross. And yeah, like you have to like cut it way back and then like soak in Epsom salt for days.
More or less painful than your supersized gallbladder stone?
Not even close. The gallbladder was so much more painful.
Really? That was one of the largest they'd ever seen, right?
Yeah, it was 3/4 the size of my gallbladder.
So gross. When we Next played question. At the American Cancer Society tournament the other day, Howdy actually used it to tee off on hole 4. 4!
Is it like the size of a racquetball?
What was that?
The size of a racquetball, size of a golf ball?
Well, the size of a size like ball. A Cadbury egg.
That's a gross comparison.
You Next
like Cadbury eggs.
But you also like cottage cheese. Jerks, who's harder on themselves? Danny or Lydia? Follow up. Do any of you have any doubt that Danny will say Lydia and Lydia will say Danny?
I have problems.
No, I do. I think they will both say themselves. I think they will both say that they are hardest on themselves.
I hope Lydia is not as hard as herself on herself as I am on myself.
Danny, when you were recounting that story of being stuck in traffic and, you know, having that unfortunate incident last Friday, I couldn't relate to you more of just like going through the inner turmoil of like self-loathing that must have been going through your mind of like, I was very much in that story with you. Like,
I could not.
Terrible.
You guys
feeling.
Are sort of peas of a pod.
Yeah, I fully snapped. And like, I don't mean that. And like, my reaction was out of degree, especially when you hear the full story, which probably isn't as bad as I make it sound.
Yeah.
But
Lydia wouldn't. You wouldn't snap like that, right? You wouldn't get mad in that spot. So what,
no,
how would
just
you handle
be,
that?
Mine
in the
would
car?
Be turned inward.
Right.
Mine would be probably a lot of negative self talk on myself.
So what would you do? Like, would you cry? Would you punch something in anger? Like, is there a frustration level?
No, it'd just probably be like a constant stream of like just me thinking like, oh my gosh, am I going to get fired? I mean, like, what happens if I get fired? Like, where am I going to get a job? Like, what would happen?
How?
Like, where? What am I qualified to do? Oh my gosh, do I need to like it would just be this constant stream of.
It gets low in a hurry.
Yeah,
it
goes low quick.
I am professionally irresponsible. I deserve to have this happen to me. I deserve to run into that kind of traffic because I don't adequately prepare. I deserve to have everyone see me for the fraud that I am.
So you guys both start off the same
Danny,
way.
We
the
could
difference
just go
though
back
is
and
that
forth.
Danny then starts hitting things. In the car out of anger.
Correct.
Lydia doesn't do that.
I've learned diffusion techniques. Maybe this will help you, Lydia.
There you go.
So what I've learned is when I get into those feedback loops where I'm hearing that voice, what I've been told to do is have those same things said in a ridiculous voice. Imagine Darth Vader saying it. Imagine
Ooh,
C-3PO
like
saying, like,
you are totally inadequate to serve in this job.
So that helps?
Yeah, because you start laughing about it. And you realize how ridiculous it sounds.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah, like
is
where
that cognitive behavioral therapy?
Yeah, CBT.
Yeah,
yeah. Use it for all sorts of things.
Wow, that's pretty
amazing.
Good.
I've done some CBT, but I've never heard that.
That's
before.
A good idea.
Yeah, it's called diffusion.
Brilliant.
That's in the upper division courses. So I think we can see that I am tougher on myself than Lydia. I win. I'm the most miserable.
No one is more miserable than you.
I love you, Danny.
All right, Jerks and Lydia. Since you've been doing the most intriguing Seahawks, what's the most intriguing animal on the planet?
Platypus.
Because of the mammal thing?
Yeah, and it's got a furry bill, and it's got a flat tail.
It's fair.
The platypus. How did the platypus happen? Did a couple animals get hopped up on some poisonous mushrooms and they created a new being?
Sloth is pretty intriguing to me, too. It moves so slow and does so little in its life, has a lot of predators, and yet it still finds a way to survive.
I'm shocked that you find that so interesting.
Yeah.
How about the giant squid or the colossal squid?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're in the depths. People have been searching for them forever. We know they're there, but you never see one alive. Occasionally, a dead one washes up. Heather and I, my friend Nate, too, the three of us have always, like, focused hard on any giant squid news that comes out. I don't like them. I'll be clear.
David Gran wrote a phenomenal story about squid hunters.
Yeah.
That was really, really good. It was just
about the giant
anthology.
Squid hunters?
Yes.
Man, there's nuts stuff down there.
A couple guys died.
Of course.
That's crazy.
Yes.
You deserve it for chasing giant squid.
Humboldt squid. The Humboldt squid.
The colossal squid has eyes the size of saucers. Dinner plates, it says. How big is that? Dinner plate eye? Yeah. No, thank you.
Do you think the sloth shares traits with Gras? Like when the sloth goes home, he's like, taking the foot commute.
See you in an hour.
They both take a long time to start and finish their smiles.
Yeah. Oh, that's true, too. I saw Grouse when he was walking because I now drive that route pretty frequently. And I was going to like honk and wave, and I was like, there's no way the Grouse is even engaged to even look.
How about other intriguing animals?
I was just talking about any old animal that's essentially like a dinosaur is, you know, like sort of animal. Like gators really fascinate me. I was learning the other day, they don't eat that much, which surprises you, right? But it takes them so long to metabolize things. They just have to basically sit in the sun and their back is like a solar panel that just heats their belly up and helps them digest their food. But they don't eat that much.
Do you know the difference between a gator and a crocodile?
It has to do with their teeth. Like, one of them on, like, the outside of their face. They're also, their snout is a little bit differently. And then one lives more in, like, the marsh type. One's a little more like a water amphibious creature. One's a little bit more on land.
Size, too. I think crocodiles are quite a bit larger. Yeah.
And caiman is a crocodile, I believe. One of the guys I
I'm not going to pretend I know. I don't want to get sea-rodged in this one. I don't want to start talking about freshwater rivers.
Well, that's freshwater.
Right.
One of the guys I lived with in college had a baby grand caiman crocodile, which was absurd. It was ridiculous. No, it was in an aquarium. We had the power go out one time, and he had it sleep on his chest.
What?
Yeah. He ended up becoming a cop.
You're playing with fire, dude. Yeah. No, thank you. All right, we got to go. Time for us to get out of here. Danny, thank you. That was fun.
Is today going to be a better day
than yesterday? I got to tell you, probably not. I'm not feeling it. I'm not feeling like today is going to be any better than yesterday.
Come on, come on. Feel it, feel it.
Is that what Nostradamus
would
say?
Feel the vibration.
No, that's Mark Wahlberg.
I'm aware. It's not really Mark Wahlberg.
I
want to
see sweat
that's
coming
Marky
at your pores.
I'll tell you what, tomorrow is going to be cool,
though.
Yeah, I know.
Tomorrow we're going to be down at Seahawks facility. Training camp gets going. We'll be there at 7 a.m. Brock will be back. Don't know yet which Seahawk will be with us. Should be somebody of great repute. We'll catch you guys tomorrow morning. 7 a.m. Till then, the hay.
Barn.
See everybody. No right or wrong answer. Jim's right on that one, 100%.
This is a chopper!